www.radio.com。Welcome to America Tonight, coast to coast, and all those nooks and crannies in between. Kate Delaney, as always, happy to be with you. And we go inside the Beltway each and every show. We're always thrilled to do that, and especially with my pal Ellen Ratner from Talk Radio News. She's the best, I'll tell you what. And we get to look at the week ahead, and there's some exciting things, I guess exciting things, to look forward to. Depends on your point of view. And also some things that happened over the weekend, including if you watch some of the Sunday shows, I call it the Sunday Swirl, with all the pundits and politicians and everything. It's kind of an exciting day, actually. One of the things you might have heard discussed was Social Security leaving it out of the swacking with all the spending cuts. Ellen, you, I'm sure, saw that as well. And, of course, Social Security, that's been the tug of war now for this last, well, forever, but for this last week, it's been pretty hot and heavy, that discussion.
Well, that's for sure. And the issue, of course, is that they did leave it out. They're doing things. I got a call from a friend of mine, and I'll be telling you more about this as I learn more about it. But a friend of mine who's an emergency room physician saying that one of the things the Republicans cut out are all the poison centers around the country. Now, why wouldn't you take a look at means testing Social Security, Social Security fixes, but then you're going to cut out all the poison centers across the country? Now, that just makes no sense.
That makes no sense to me. I had no idea. Wow. Poison
like
centers.
Like a poison pill.
Yeah, no kidding. Yeah, I mean, how often, can you imagine how often those lines blow up and how many problems people have? I can think of a couple of neighbors at least.
Exactly.
Wow. So that's what we're looking at.
And by not taking a look at Social Security and not taking a look at Medicare and not talking about doing some means testing and not talking about some pretty simple fixes, they're really hurting a lot of the populace.
Yeah, no kidding. And we're going to talk more about that on America Tonight because we've been talking about that a lot, definitely. Libya exploding, just another country in the Middle East exploding, and Muammar Gaddafi is obviously safe and secure because the army vows to do everything they can to make sure things don't crumble, from what I'm told.
Well, that's what's supposedly happening. And, of course, his son got up and gave this sort of rambling speech. Basically saying, you know, we're telling the truth, and then every time he told the truth about people being killed, he wasn't telling the truth. There's also reports that the area that is controlled that produces a lot of the oil are saying that they're not going to give out any of the oil unless there is more democracy. So it's really getting pretty heavy over there very quickly.
Yeah, boy, no kidding. I wanted to ask you this question because a lot of people have been asking me this, how I feel about women journalists covering the Middle East when there's a revolution or things get crazy. And it piggybacks on Lara Logan, sadly, what happened with her. There's not a lot of details, but we know that story broke because CBS kind of kept it under wraps that she was assaulted and was separated from her crew for 25, 30 minutes. How do you feel about that?
Well, you know, I've covered some pretty hairy situations, whether it's been in Iraq or I once unfortunately stupidly waded into a crowd that was protesting under Clinton when Clinton was president Bosnia, you know, when all of that was going on. So there have been some pretty hairy situations, and I think women, whether you're in a Mideastern country or not, are usually more prone to problems, and you just have to be really careful or decide not to do it.
Yeah, I agree with you 100%. Let's jump to Scott Brown. Scott Brown does a big 60 Minutes interview. You know, he's given some interviews here and there, but I think it was pretty revealing. What did you think?
I thought it was extremely revealing, and I was sitting with a bunch of people who actually live and vote in Massachusetts, and they said that had he voted straight line with the Republicans all the time, he would not be so popular, but he doesn't. He's very smart. He votes with them when it's appropriate, when it's not appropriate. He's no liberal, but that his also being so open about his life has made him very much a hero in Massachusetts.
Yeah, and I think that's what, and actually I think that's some of what people would get out of the interview. It's interesting. I have friends from Massachusetts who say the same thing. If he voted down the line, Republican, they wouldn't be so thrilled with him, but that was the whole thing. He said he was going to vote how he felt for the people of Massachusetts because that's who he was representing. Coming up this week, what do we have to look forward to from inside the Beltway?
The president is going to be going to my hometown of Cleveland, Ohio on Tuesday. He's going to be talking about economic development organizations in Ohio, and this is also clearly a little hit at the governor of Ohio, who lost, Governor Strickland, the Democrat, lost to the Republican, and the White House is going way after the Republicans by going to Ohio.
Yes. Yeah, no kidding. We'll keep an eye on that to see what happens out of Ohio. Ellen Ratner from Talk Radio News, thanks so much, as always, for joining us and giving us your thoughts on what's happening in Washington. We appreciate it. We'll talk to you later in the week.
Thank you.
All right, let's jump back to something that we mentioned briefly in what's ahead this week. One thing that's coming down the pike is, will the government shut down or not? The conversation has ratcheted up. And last week, as I said to many of you, I know some of you listening, get checks from the government. Get checks, Social Security checks or disability checks, whatever it is. And then some of you might work for the government. Some of you have government jobs. So you want to know, is the government going to shut down? It happened the last time in 95, if you remember. And President Clinton in office then. And then there was, you know, talking about poof, shuts down. And now you got this possibility of it happening again. But if it happens, who gets jammed up in this? Who gets jammed up in this? And there's no simple answer except for that the people who would be out of work, the people who are getting the checks, because that would be backed up a little bit. It would have to be because nobody's processing them. So that would affect you. It would affect you when you go to get your check from the mailbox. It's not going to be there. You're going to have to wait maybe a couple days. Who knows? So you have all this political drama and this showdown and the lines in the sand, and you have Chuck Schumer who says, you know, we're prepared to negotiate right away. And he's a Democrat, of course, longtime liberal Democrat from New York. And then you have your staunch Republican Tom Coburn from Oklahoma, the Republican, saying it's good for political rhetoric to talk about government shutdown, but I don't know anyone that wants that to happen. Too much is at stake with all these ultimatums that are being thrown around. And who are the ones that are going to be hurt by this? Like I said, it's probably going to be the people who need it the most, the people who need their Social Security checks. That's the people. Or the people who are signing up for their Social Security. That would be delayed. And that affects you. Why? Because you've got to pay your bills. Nobody cares. No credit card company, no mortgage company, no city government. Oh, they've got my money backed up. They don't care. You know, the federal government, in doing a little research on this, has had about a dozen or so shutdowns since 81. Usually a few hours. Those don't last very long. You forget about them. The one that lasted the longest was the 95-96 punch. They were ones that people remember when Clinton in 95 vetoed a Republican spending bill because he said it was insufficient for health care, education, and other programs, remember? So 6 days. Could this be longer? Stay with us. Coming up next, a nun-turned-CIA agent.
The food storage industry leader has done it again.
Introducing FDG Clubs and Survival Bucks from the Freeze Dry Guy. For over 39 years, the Freeze Dry Guy has served various government agencies and the private sector with the finest in storable foods and emergency rations. If you've wanted to build emergency food supplies but couldn't afford it, now you can. Go to freezedryguy.com, click on products, and look for the Freeze Dry Guy Clubs to pay as you go. Now you can build food storage without going into debt. Choose from a payment range of $95 to $450 per month. month.
Our clubs work with everyone's budget.
Plus, when you join Freeze Dry Guy clubs, you'll get additional rewards. For example, this month, get 10% back in survival bucks on all purchases in the Freeze Dry Guy product line, plus free shipping within the lower 48 states on any order amount. Hurry. Go to freezedryguy.com or call 866-404-3663. That's freezedryguy.com or call 866-404-3663. The Freeze Dry Guy, the best you can buy.
Have you ever felt like the United States government knows way too much about your financial affairs? I continue to hear stories about property seizures, frozen bank accounts, confiscation of stocks and bonds. It makes me wonder if the U.S. citizen will ever again have the right to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. Unfortunately, with the Drug and Money Laundering Act, the IRS Revenue Ruling 6045 of 1984, and the Trading with the Enemy Act and Franklin D. Roosevelt's Executive Order of 1933, some precious metal holdings are subject to government intervention. For this reason, Midas Resources has prepared a report explaining the boundaries of trading precious metals privately. Whether if you have any intention of trading with Midas Resources or not, I have instructed my representatives to give this report out free. Call for your free copy at 1-800-686-2237. When investing, always proceed with caution. Again, call 1-800-686-2237. Exercise your legal right to trade metals privately. 1-800-686-2237.
Becoming a modern smoker is now easier and more cost-effective, thanks to LeSig. Traditional smokers the world over love LeSig. E-cigarettes with a look, feel, and taste of real cigarettes, but without the nasty smoke, ashes, or stains. LeSig is powered by revolutionary microelectronic technology. A small, rechargeable battery and unique replaceable cartridge provide all the satisfaction and benefits of smoking without the smoke and all the hazards. See the large variety of LeSig e-cigarette supplies and accessories at LeSig.com. That's LeSig.com. LeSig is competitively priced, comes with the best customer service, a 30-day warranty, and satisfaction guaranteed. What a great gift idea. For a 10% discount, mention GCN when you call 870-518-4307. That's 870-518-4307. Ask for fast, free, same-day shipping. Order online at LeSig.com and use promo code GCN at checkout. That's LeSig.com. LeSig, for today's modern smoker.
I can't wait to introduce you to our next guest, Martha Liker. She was a nun who was actually part of the Missionary Sisters of Our Lady of Africa back in the late 50s. And for 17 years, she worked so nobly, certainly as a nun in the States and overseas. And then here's the twist in the plot, and you can't make this up. I'm serious. In the late 70s, she joined the CIA, a lot of assignments in Africa. How about that? Right now, Martha Liker, when she retired in the late 90s, the former regional VP for the National Art Active, rather, and retired Federal Employees Association, she joins us now from Denver, Colorado. She's got a new book out called From Silence to Secrecy, a memoir. Really a page-turner. Martha, thanks for popping on ATN.
Well, thank you. It's my pleasure.
And you know the obvious question and the one that you address, how does a nun become a CIA operative? I don't. How does that happen?
Well, it wasn't something that was planned. After I had left the order, I was looking for something to do, and I wanted to work for the government. So I went downtown Denver to get an application to work for the government. And as I was walking out of the building, a poster caught my eye. And it was Uncle Sam in his tricolored hat with his finger pointing, saying, "I need you." And I looked at it, and I, among all the countries listed, I saw Africa. So I said, "I'm going back to Africa." So I just sent in the application, and it snowballed after that.
And do they pick you because, oh, this is almost a good cover. This woman, you know, she obviously was a missionary. I'll call you a missionary nun and knows Africa. And how perfect is this? Do you think that's part of the reason why you were chosen?
Probably because I had been there. I had, you know, I knew the culture and I had been through the cultural shock. So, yes, that probably is part of the reason.
When you, we'll talk about the first part of your, well, let's do that. Let's go back to when you were a nun. So you're a nun and you're in Africa. And what kind of impression did that country leave on you? Obviously a big one because the poster then later caught your eye. What was it like the years when you were there and where were you in Africa?
Well, ever since I was a very young girl, I had wanted to go to Africa. So I had chosen this particular order that sent their sisters only to Africa. So I knew that I would have my chance to get there. And I was in Zambia for 8 years, and I worked there as, well, in the beginning I had to learn the language, and then I taught in the local language, and then after that I became the bursar or administrator for the 10 houses that were in Zambia. So I had to travel all over.
And what was it like when you were traveling as a nun? Did you, you know, all the orders are different. Some, you know, I went to school with the Sisters of the Immaculata, and they had a full, all the way down, you know, to the floor. They're covered, and they have a habit. What was your dress like? Did people know you were a nun by the way you dressed? Did you wear a habit?
Oh, yes, we had a habit, and it was modified after a few years. I mean, the veil was smaller and shorter, and the dress was shorter. But yes, no, they knew we were nuns, yes.
And did you have any problems? How did the people treat you? Because Zambia at times can be a pretty scary place. What was it like traveling around to not just Zambia, but all over the place?
Well, I didn't have any problems traveling around. And I had to learn how to, you know, change tires because there were no filling stations around on the road where I was traveling because our nearest house was 400 miles away. So there were many things I had to learn to do myself.
Yeah. Then you go back as a CIA operative, and what was that like?
Well, it was different because it was from a different perspective. Now I was considered a rich American because, I was living in a house alone. And before that, I had, you know, as a nun, I lived with other sisters. So it was very different.
And what was your job? I mean, were you to get information, to see what was happening? What did you do? What was the focus of much of what you did for them?
Well, that I really can't go into.
But I'm just assuming it was intelligence gathering. You can say that, right?
Right. Mm-hmm.
Okay, so you were intelligence gathering. Were you, same thing, were you scattered all over Africa? You lived in a house. Would you primarily, were you in one region?
Yes, I was in one region, yes. Uh-huh.
Wow. And as in your role with the CIA, because it's such a difference, because obviously some skills you had from being a nun and the trust of the people and knowing the country and the language and stuff, especially in Zambia. But the mindset had to be different. Was it hard for you to make that transition, just you yourself?
Well, in the beginning it was, but after a while, you know, I got used to my new role. So there were a lot of things I had to change, think differently.
Right. And did you, you know, when you return to Africa and then you're on assignment, what did you get back to the States much? I mean, was it kind of, were you just there and stayed there and lived there, or did you occasionally get the chance to come back stateside?
No, we had 2-year tours, so mm-hmm. I got to come back after every 2 years. Yes.
Yeah. Because of how Africa is now, I'm just wondering, did you have to go through the full, I mean, you were intelligence gathering, did you have to carry a gun? I mean, here you went from having a modified habit, did you have to have a gun? Did you have a gun in your house or carry a gun? No.
No.
Well, that was good, because that would continue. I'm just envisioning, you know, we've had all kinds of nuns, and I'm just envisioning you at target practice and how how strange that would be, to be sure. So then you say in the book, you talk about that your toughest assignment actually happened after you retired. I mean, all the things that you did in Africa. So what was your toughest assignment when you retired?
Well, you know, in Africa, I had experienced a cultural shock. I had hepatitis from the impure drinking water, and I had had different kinds of parasites, lack of the common basics sometimes, and I saw the poorest of the poor, visited a leper colony, but now back in the United States, I was told I had cancer. So I was in disbelief, and actually I was in denial because I said it cannot happen to me. I had been through too much in Africa, and now all of a sudden here in the USA, where everything was, you know, sophisticated and you had everything at your fingertips, I said, it can't happen. Well, it did happen, and I went through 6 months of chemo and 7 weeks of radiation, but now I'm a survivor, so I made it through.
Oh, good for you. And how long have you been cancer-free?
It's been 10 years now.
Oh, good for you. Congratulations on that. What would you tell people about, in wrapping this up, what would you tell people about Africa? What would you tell people that are listening to this about the people that you encountered there? What were they like? I mentioned this at the top. What was it like? But what do you think the people are like?
Oh, well, the people are very friendly. I was very much at ease with them. And I was accepted as one of them for a long time. So I would say there's nothing to be afraid of. It's just a different culture. You have to learn, you know, to accept different ideas.
Yeah, absolutely. Different ideas. How many languages did you speak? You mentioned that you were able to communicate with people in Zambia, but did you pick up any other languages?
Well, I had to learn French, and I had to learn Chibemba, because I worked with the Bemba tribe.
Mm-hmm. Was that hard to do that, to switch from language to language?
Yes, I can't say no. Yes, it was.
I can imagine. Well, what is it like to have you on the show, Martha Liker, and the book is called From Silence to Secrecy. Thanks for coming on America Tonight. It was fun.
Well, thank you. It's been my pleasure.
All right, pick up the book. It's good. It is a very good read. Can you imagine just falling in love as a kid with Africa? Just boom, this is this wild place I want to go to. Going there as a nun, and then the secrecy of the CIA. You can tell she wouldn't even tell us anything other than she was an intelligence gathering. So you know that she had to spy on the people there. She had to spy and see what was going on and what was happening in the country. So that would be a really crazy, I think, flip. Hey, if you have any thoughts about the show, remember you can always look us up through the website, americatonight.net. Also, click on Facebook and Twitter, my friends.
There's a man named Dr. Wallach, who is anything but your typical doctor. Both a veterinarian and naturopathic physician, Doc asks, why does the United States spend more money on healthcare by far and still rank 50th in health and longevity worldwide? He believes that people should empower themselves with a basic understanding of nutrition, taking charge of their life, and attain optimal health and longevity through nutrition, not by toxic prescription drugs leading to side effects. This is clearly a deadly recipe. The good news is Doc Wallach's message is resonating with an increasing number of Americans who are waking up to all the big government and big pharma manipulation of our healthcare system. I like what Doc Wallach is saying and doing to enlighten people about healthcare and have joined forces to help this tireless crusader spread his message. Visit InfoWarsTeam.com and listen to Dr. Wallach's Deadly Recipes lecture. It makes a lot of sense, and I want you to join our InfoWars team. Go to InfoWarsTeam.com. That's InfoWarsTeam.com.
The GCN Radio Network, providing the world with hard-hitting talk radio. GCN. Great talk radio starts here.
We all know that Berkey Water Purification Systems are the most trusted name in water filtration. As an authorized Berkey dealer for over 5 years and serving thousands of satisfied customers, the Berkey guy offers amazing specials for Berkey Water Filtration Systems. The Berkey Light Systems include a set of self-sterilizing and recleanable black purification elements that purify water by removing chlorine, pathogenic bacteria, cysts, and parasites to non-detectable levels and remove harmful chemicals such as herbicides and pesticides. Order the Berkey Light System today, complete with two black Berkey elements for only $209, and the Berkey guy will include three Sport Berkey water bottles and ship everything to you free of charge. That's right, three Sport Berkey water bottles and free shipping. An $87 value, yours free. Call the Berkey guy at 1-877-886-3653. That's 1-877-886-3653. Or order online at GoBerkey.com. That's GoBerkey.com today.
At HempUSA.org, we offer chemical-free products to people around the world, detoxifying, self-healing, while rebuilding the immune system. We urge our listeners to please consider our largest-selling product, Microplant Powder. Our microplant powder is rich in silica and probiotics to help rebuild the immune system and to create a healthy stomach flora. Microplant powder is excellent for daily intake and is perfect to add to your storage shelter. We urge our listeners to please visit us at hempusa.org. And remember, all of our products are chemical-free and healthy to eat. We constantly strive to give you the best service, highest quality, and rapid shipping anywhere. And we offer free shipping on orders over $95 in the U.S. Please visit us at hempusa.org or call 908-691-2608. That's 908-691-2608. See what our powder, seeds, and oil can do for you at hempusa.org.
9 years, thousands of clients worldwide, amazing results. And here's more proof of the effectiveness of how Heart and Body Extract supports good circulation and healthy arterial flow.
My name is Crystal. I'm a 45-year-old and live in Houston, Texas. I was diagnosed with having mitral valve prolapse 10 years ago. My cardiologist said surgery and drugs was the only thing he could offer me.
What did Crystal do?
I ordered Heart and Body Extract in August 2006. When I first took my first 15 drops, I embraced the formula and could even feel the goodness of the formula starting to work.
Clean, clear arteries are happy arteries after using Heart and Body Extract. Learn more at hbextract.com or call 866-295-5305. That's hbextract.com or call 866-295-5305. HB Extract comes with a 100% ironclad money-back guarantee. Details at hbextract.com or call 866-295-5305 for Heart and Body Extract.
So what's the temperature where you are? I just checked, and I'm going to check again. I checked outside, and then I checked on the handy-dandy iPhone. 69 degrees. So we've dropped down a few degrees. 69 degrees. Do you believe it? And, of course, our satellite facility is in Texas. So 2 weeks ago, it's ice and snow and mayhem and cars crashing and all kinds of problems. And now 69 degrees. It was about tennis over the weekend and hanging out and kicking back with a few cold ones. I'm sure some of you can relate. I know that there are people who are getting snow in the Northeast. Snow is on the way. But the Midwest, particularly our friends at the Mothership, in Minnesota, specifically in Minneapolis, are getting slammed. Let's go to Matt Johnson and check in on that. I think he had to climb up onto the satellite and brush the snow off just so we could broadcast this little old show called America Tonight. Matt, I hope that you've thawed out. How much snow is there now falling in Minneapolis?
Well, we've had at least 12 inches. I'm sure a lot of the weather people have already gone home and tried to make it back to their houses, so I don't think it's completely updated, but I know for a fact about 5 hours ago we had 12 inches, so I'm guessing and it hasn't stopped snowing, so I'm guessing we're approaching the 20-inch range.
Woo! 20 inches of snow. You know what? Even for people in Minnesota, I don't care with the snow plows and everything else, that's pretty brutal. That's tough. And how odd. I mean, it's, you know, the rest of us are practically, or some of us anyway, are practically sun tanning. What's the weather like where you are? Is it brutal, or is it, you know, were you wearing the shorts over the weekend? It's interesting because I read this story somewhere I found about the planet being unrecognizable by 2050. And I thought, am I going to be here 2050? Let's see, 2050. What they're saying, though, it wasn't so much about let's go down the road of global warming, but it was more about the population and that it would be unrecognizable for many of us from what we're seeing now today. It was at a major U.S. science conference on Sunday. Now, the United Nations is predicting the global population will reach 7 billion this year. What's the population where you're listening to me? How many people are around you? Are you feeling squeezed in? 7 billion. And it'll climb to 9 billion by 2050. And where do you think most of that growth is happening? Not to play the Jeopardy theme, or not to try to emulate the Jeopardy theme, but okay. So we're talking Africa and South Asia, and I don't think that's a big surprise. But what has to happen here is what you have to think about is how much food can you produce to feed all of those people to meet those needs in the next 40-some years? There's not going to be enough food to go around. There's no way. With the swelling population, the problems, think about it. Resources, that's the first thing you got to think of. In fact, there was a guy we had on this show, the director of the Initiative in Population Research. He's from Ohio State University. John Casterline is his name. We'll have him back on again. And he was one of the people quoted that said, you know, forget about it. We're going to limp along in 40 years. How in these developing nations there's going to be more of a strain to the global food supplies? Because people tend to move up the food chain as their income moves up, right? So they consume more meat than they might have when they made less money. It's true, isn't it? I mean, think about it. It's like people who get food stamps. What are they getting? What can they afford to get? You see, it's all the stuff, the cheese and whatever. And it's cheap food. You know, it's the old joke about when you're in college, but not forget when you're just in college, people saying they're eating ramen noodles. That's what they're eating. They're eating ramen noodles or other Pop-Tarts. What did your diet consist of? Ramen noodles, Pop-Tarts, and we threw in a few baked potatoes. So that's true. It takes about 7 pounds of grain, they say, to produce a pound of meat. And 3 to 4 pounds of grain to produce a pound of cheese or eggs. I didn't realize that. So more people, more consumption, the kind of the same planet, and lots of troubles, I would say. So I'm going to, for once, agree with this science that's been released as science information. I'm not saying I don't agree with a lot of the stuff that's out there. But in this case, of course, if you don't have family planning programs and there isn't contained growth, and it just spirals out of control, especially in areas where they can't afford it. What's going to happen? And the only way you can try to curb it, I guess, is to offer that family planning, let's say, to Africa and to Asia and to some of those poor areas. But now you get into sticky terrain. So I know this is already happening. Do you think the people in Africa and some of these tribes, do you think they're using condoms? And then what do you do? Tell people that birth control is okay? That it's okay? You can, birth control is, you know, this is the way to control this. And then you think about, like, China, where the people are, because of the growth of the population, that they're forced to have just one child. Can you imagine in the United States if they told you, well, this is what you get, one child, baby. Now, you want a son and a daughter, well, that's too bad. Just whatever you have, that's it, period. One child, that's all we can afford to have here, one child. That's a government rule, one child per household. And we see what's happened, sadly, when lives have been taken with devastating earthquakes and in parts of China, and families are just torn up because they lose their only child. And in other circumstances where they've lost the child, the one child they were able to have. So what is it that you do? How do you tweak this, the fertility? And how do you do that? In China, they're not letting them reproduce. So now what are you saying? That, okay, because we know what's going to happen here, and how can you feed these mouths? You don't want starving people. What's the right thing to do? What's the right thing to do? You put restrictions on how many children they can have? Or how about helping them learn to grow? It's like the thing about giving some of the villages a goat, and when they raise the goat, if you have the goat, they can feed the village or they can feed the family. And there are programs to do that, to get goats into each and every one of these households, because what a difference it would make in their food supply. Well, the bottom line is you have to produce as much food in the next 40 years as they have in the last 8,000. As the world is going to have to produce as much food in the last, you hear what I said, in the last 40 years as we have in the last 8,000. Good luck with that. How do you think that happens? I'm sure some of you have figured this out, right? 800-259-5791. I'm just going to throw it out there. A couple of other things. I haven't even hit the highlight reel from the weekend. And, boy, are there things to talk about. While in the United States, there's concern about whether or not the government shuts down, like happened in 95, where it was shut down for 6 days, so people didn't get checks, Social Security checks, and those are the ones that would really be affected in my mind. And people who work for the government who lose 6 days of work, they're gone for 6 days and they've got mouths to feed themselves, and that creates a problem in the family. I mean, you got it. So the big thing is these cuts and what happens to, like, education, for example. This is a big deal. Wisconsin is ground zero for what's going on, but it's not the only state. There's 40 other states in the same pinch. And a lot of this goes back to, specifically in Wisconsin, the union. Governor Scott Walker said that over the weekend and heading into the weekend, said that the 14 Democrats who walked out were wrong. He said that who left Madison, the people who left Madison on Thursday, didn't do their jobs by hiding out in another state. And the Senate Majority Leader in Wisconsin said that they're going to meet this week to act on non-spending bills and confirm some of the appointees, even if the Democrats don't show up. So the constituents of the people who left, I'm sure, are not too thrilled about that. But at the same time, do you know how many people are marching on the state capitol? I've been there. I've been to this cute little town called Madison. We're talking, it's just a sea of people. I haven't seen a protest like this. I haven't seen one like this, I have to be honest. In my lifetime, I've seen it like this over this situation. The Democrats say that they're firmly opposed to the budget repair bill, which would take the right of most public employees to collective bargaining for their benefits and working conditions, okay? So you had, they believe 90,000, the people who are counting, 90,000 who have gone to the Capitol and marched around Madison. We're talking 6 days. 6 days straight. Even on Sunday, the pressure is still there. And the teachers' union, the teachers are supposed to return Monday, but they've been calling in sick, so they've had to shut public schools down across the state of Wisconsin. And some districts, some of the public schools weren't going to take President's Day off, but they're canceling class on Monday because of the expected teacher protests. And specifically the teachers say, you know, we've agreed to cuts in health care and retirement and even reducing take-home pay, but we're not going to do this. We don't think that this is right. And I think they're going to keep the pressure up in Wisconsin. So ultimately, what happens there, wonder if that has any at all effect on some of the other problems around the other states who are dealing with, like, education cuts in some of the other states. Stay with us.
It's the winter cold and flu supplement sale at HerbalHealer.com. Take advantage of Herbal Healer Academy's incredible savings on the best cold and flu supplements available. Many of you know elderberry is exceptional against viral infections. Right now, Herbal Healer Academy has elderberry power, regularly priced at $16.95, now incredibly low, at only $10 for 60 vegetarian caps. For children and seniors, our Herbal Healer Academy Flu Away Elderberry Liquid is only $13 for a 4-ounce bottle. Also on super sale, olive leaf capsules, oregano oil plus capsules, and our incredible respirate formula, Oregacillin Physician Strength Capsules for your lungs. Normally $34.95, now just $25. Hit the winter specials link at HerbalHealer.com for these cold and flu supplement specials and other on sale products like apple cider vinegar, brain power, and neuro recovery. New customers get a free catalog with your first order. Log on and hit the winter specials now at HerbalHealer.com.
Never buy home canning jar lids again. No kidding. When you buy Tadler reusable canning lids once, you'll never buy canning lids ever again. Safely store emergency preparedness foods for years. Traditional metal lids are single-use throwaways containing BPA. But Tadler reusable canning lids are guaranteed to last a lifetime when used as designed for home canning. Tadler lids are made with a USDA and FDA-approved food-grade plastic, safe for direct food contact, and contain no BPA. Tadler lids are dishwasher safe, usable with standard pressure or water bath canning, eliminate food spoilage from acid corrosion, fit standard mason jars, are indefinitely reusable, and are proudly made in the USA. Place orders at reusablecanninglids.com or call 1-877-747-2793, 877-747-2793. Call 877-747-2793 or go to reusablecanninglids.com. That's reusablecanninglids.com for Tadler reusable canning lids, the original since 1976.
Sore throat? Spray that with Dermatol. Diaper rash? Spray that with Dermatol.
Ouch!
Burn or cut? Spray that with Dermatol for shockingly fast relief. If you had room for only one first aid product in your preparedness kit, you need Dermatol because it works on almost every skin irritation or injury. All natural Dermatol brings amazing relief to burns, cuts, scrapes, bites, boils, shingles, rashes, elderly skin tears, even chronic diabetic ulcers and bed sores. Dermatol is an all-natural, antimicrobial, antiviral, and antifungal wound cleanser that speeds healing with no side effects, is safe for all ages and skin types, and is even safe enough to spray on sore throats or onto sore eyes. Read our many testimonials at Dermatol.com, spelled D-E-R-M-A-T-O-L.com. Order online at Dermatol.com or call 800-217-6677. That's 800-217-6677. Effective, efficient, economical. Spray it all with Dermatol.
Just carry flashlights, but to carry guns on campus. This has been a debate that's been going on now for a couple of years. More than half of the people in the Texas House have signed as co-authors of this bill that would allow the college campuses in Texas to have concealed handguns. It'd allow the professors to carry them and the students. The Senate passed a bill a couple of years ago, and they should easily do it. The Republican Governor Rick Perry packs a pistol when he jogs. He has no problem with it. He's massively in favor of this idea because he doesn't want to see a disaster in any of the Texas universities like they had in Virginia. So Texas is now become the test zone or battleground state for this issue. Yeah, let's hope that the campuses don't erupt into gun wars. But anyway, because of the gun culture in Texas and the size, you got 38 public universities and 500,000 students. So it would be the second state following Utah to pass a pretty broad-stroked law. Colorado gives colleges the option, and several have allowed handguns. I don't know that many people know that. Virginia Tech in 2007 was a very scary, horrible thing. And then they had a similar incident in northern Illinois the following year. So what is the best defense against a lunatic with a gun on a college campus when the cops can't get there soon enough? The security guards can't get there soon enough because they're on the other side or it's too early in the morning or whatever reason. So how do you cut down gun violence on a major campus where you have very vulnerable people? Is it right, do you think, to have professors with the ability to be armed? And they're not saying they have to be. It's totally if they want to be. And what about the college students? You can see both sides of this. I'm a supporter of the Second Amendment, so I'm always going to say I think people should have the right. My problem is there should be strict training, not this loosey-goosey deal where you just go in, you get a gun, no questions asked. Eh, I don't think so. There's plenty of kids on a college campus that could be just trashed out of their mind that might accidentally shoot somebody. And so as much as you don't want to see some deranged, suicidal nut going into a building and just pick off defenseless people, which is sickening, and kids are sitting ducks. So I agree with that they should have the ability to carry the gun if they want to. And the professor, certainly, same thing, should be able to carry a gun if they want to. But I just pray if these people do that, they know how to use it. And they use some common sense. And as that leaves my lips, I wonder if that's an oxymoron. I'm thinking back when I was in college, I went to a pretty decent-sized college, Ohio University. And I think there's some people that I went to school with that I don't know I'd want them to be armed. They were nice people, but, boy, armed, I could see them shooting the wrong person. Maybe not just because they thought they saw something. So, you know, it was really the Virginia Tech deal that pulled this discussion open. And it's just a horrible day for way too many people. It should not have happened. When I think of the fact that you had kids in a class, people in a class that lost their lives just going to school, it's just, I can't even fathom it still. And it's years ago that this has happened, a handful of years, 16 people dead. 16 people who could be out in the world right now thriving and doing who knows what kind of work. So there have been these proposals in about, I don't know, maybe 12 states or so. But most of the time they get kicked to the curb. Most of the time that it doesn't work because somebody says what I'm saying. They bring up the argument of, ooh, do we really want to have this happen? You know, if you carry, how many other people? I mean, does it improve your chances of survival or does somebody accidentally, you know, pick you off because they think they see something or, you know, whatever? Here's an interesting fact. Texas, since we're talking specifically about Texas, Texas enacted the concealed and carry or concealed handgun law in 95. So if you're 21 or older, you can carry a weapon, but you have to pass a background check and a training course. How many people, as of the end of this year, 461,724 license holders there are, in according to the Texas Department of Public Safety. So almost 500,000 people in a state where there's close to 25 million people choose to carry the guns. Businesses, schools, and churches can set rules on banning guns on you know, their premises or not. But on college campuses, guns are not allowed in the buildings, dorms, and the grounds areas around them. So would you feel safer? Do you think it would be a safer thing if students in the classes had guns? If they had guns, would it be safer? Boy, I say again, my only hesitation is that people know how to use the weapon. That's not the wild, wild west. And that's, in my head, that's what I think it could become. And that would be the problem. That you don't want to have, would you really want every college kid armed? And there would be some that I would be very worried about. What would happen? Would there be accidental shootings, which would just lead to people saying, see, this is why you shouldn't have guns, because they're so dangerous. But on the other hand, if I were one of the parents of somebody that was at Virginia Tech and my child was going to school, and if the person next to them had a gun, shot down the guy who was killing everybody, and my child was spared, then I would say, you know what? Thank God they had a gun. But the fear would be in a big college campus that it would become a shooting gallery. And I know some of you have thoughts on this. I know. I looked at my emails and it is blowing up. So you can send them to me at americatonight.net or do the chat thing or the Twitter thing or any of that stuff. We'll catch them either way. In fact, we have one here from someone who's becoming a solid listener of America Tonight through the chat. In a pickle, I do not think guns belong on campuses. No. That's a lot of no's. No. And I can imagine the reasons why. It's like I said, what if it creates more of a problem rather than helps? Just have better regulations. Stricter regulations if you're going to do that. All right, we got to give you a quick follow-up here on odds and ends because we didn't get to squish very much in as I went off on the whole gun thing and what's going to happen in Texas, because I think they're definitely going the way of Utah. I don't think they're going to have a problem with it. There was a cargo handler who was sentenced to life in prison on Thursday. Why? Because he had a plot to make JFK International go boom, boom, boom. In other words, up in smoke by attacking jet fuel supplies, and he had the help of some Al-Qaeda explosives experts. So he and Russell DeFritius and another guy had been convicted last year of multiple conspiracy counts. Now it's just official. At trial, the jurors heard the tapes recorded by the informant and all that stuff, and he was ranting about wanting to avenge U.S. mistreatment of Muslims across the globe. They nailed him. That was the good news. So now he gets life. They were arguing for a 15-year term, saying that he was egged on by the informant, but they, no deal. He gets life in prison for that, to which I say, bravo, he should have. If you remember, we went through some of what was on the tapes, and I think it was the right decision to lock him up. If anything, listen, you're going to do this, here's the deal, and you miss, you're going away. We're going to do something about it for sure. By the way, also JFK in New York, they seized about $9 million worth of opium. Boy, JFK is like the hot spot for crazy things happening, at least of the three New York airports. It was in a shipment of porcelain figurines that happened last month, and the U.S. Customs and Border folks were able to nail it. 30 porcelain cats from Thailand. How about that? They thought they could get it through the x-ray. Oh, well. Should have thought twice on that one.
You will respect my authority.